Dakota Johnson saying, actually, that's not true, Ellen, leading to the downfall of Ellen. And the one
Wait, what did Dakota, what did, what was that about?
This literally was Ellen's downfall.
I didn't know Ellen had fallen.
Haven't you seen anything about Ellen being a piece of shit for the past, like, year? Mm-mm. Where have you been?
I don't know. Where have
Bro,
I
been?
Bro,
people hate Ellen now.
Is that why Melon is a thing?
I'm Melon. Ellen was like, Dakota Johnson, you didn't invite me to your birthday party, like, on her show. And Dakota Johnson goes, actually, Ellen, that's not true. I did invite you and you didn't come. And everyone's like, only, this is a result of nepotism in Hollywood, because only the child of two actors would have the absolute gall to say that to Ellen's face. But yeah, also is like the only good thing to come out of nepotism in Hollywood, because, like, just putting Ellen in her place.
Wait, so just because she, like, didn't know that she got invited?
That it was Ellen trying to, like, be classic Ellen and, like, you didn't invite me. But, like, she's just C-word who didn't show up.
Well, maybe, like, a message got lost. You know, somebody got fired.
No, it's
over
Ellen
this.
Just being a little bitch.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Let me pull up our Google Doc. What's it called?
Toledot.
Toledot?
Toledot. Could you put in that E? Toledot.
Well, you have to, because it's obviously a Toledot.
Welcome to Pop Culture Parasha,
where we irreverently discuss reverent texts.
Nice. That's us. I'm Shoshana. This week, I am Princess Diana Beanie Babies.
Wait, no. That was me.
You did that already?
I definitely... I might have cut it out, actually,
okay.
Now that I think about it.
I would be Princess... Okay. I am Shoshana, and I am Ted Lasso's mustache.
You wrote down Princess Diana Beanie Baby?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a full conversation about it, because I was like, I had one.
I don't listen to this podcast. I don't know what to tell you.
I might have cut it out of the podcast, but we definitely had this conversation.
Okay, so I'm...
Wow, that's another one I should add to this list.
What one?
I am a Princess Diana Beanie Baby. I had one, actually. I don't know what happened to it. It would be worth probably $100.
At least $7. At least the retail price of when you bought the Beanie Baby. Okay, let's just start again then. I'm Ted Lasso's mustache.
I'm Valerie. And this week, I'm your friend who's obsessed with Friends, even though it's not very good.
Oh. It's all good.
Spicy take.
I think Friends gets unnecessary hate.
Why? Why do you think it's unnecessary?
I think it's become trendy to be like, Friends isn't funny, but I think that, like, the first 7 seasons are very funny.
I have always felt this way. This isn't a new thing.
This week's Parsha. Parshat Toldot. Toldois. For the very Ashkenazi of you. What happens in this week's Parsha? Let me pull up my Parsha in a nutshell summary, thanks to Chabad.org. Chai Sara starts with Sara, very ironically, dying. Avraham purchases a burial place for her, Marat HaMachpelah, from a guy named Ephron. Not many people know this, but Zac Efron was named after Ephron, who sold Avraham the cave, Marat HaMachpelah. Why are you rolling your eyes at me? That's true fact.
Why are you rolling your eyes at me?
It's true fact.
At literally, like, such a dad joke moment.
But Zac Efron, his last name's Efron, like, he's Jewish, according to Wikipedia, and Efron, his last name is actually, like, Efron, like, this Efron.
Oh, so you're not making that up.
I'm not making the part where it's, like, Efron is a Hebrew name up. I'm making up the part where Zac Efron is named after. How can he be named after someone named Efron when his first name is Zach and his last name is Efron?
I know. That was my eye roll. Now you're like making fun of me because I didn't laugh at your joke.
Yeah.
But now you're like, because you didn't get my... No,
yeah,
I got your joke.
Get it. Didn't get it. You don't understand me. Anyway, so that happens. And then Abraham's like, oh my God, my only son isn't married yet. He needs to get married.
Right.
So he sends his servant, his Eved, with a bunch of gifts to Haran. He's like, I've got family. What?
Wait. This is not this Parsha. You're talking about the wrong Parsha. We're doing Toldot and you're looking at Chai Sara. I was like, we did this last week.
Because I'm giving a Devar Torah on Chai Sara tonight. I'm just in Chai Sara mode.
Uh-huh.
told her, that's my bed.
I was like, this is so weird. This happens again?
This happens again. We can cut that out.
Oh, I'm leaving it all in.
No.
No, I'll cut up to the part of you being mad about... Well, because I'm going to cut out the part of you being
mad about... They don't need to know.
Me not knowing the Efron joke.
They don't need to know. Okay, this week's Parsha is really Parshat Toldot Toldois. For the more Ashkenazi of us, Parshas Toldois. That's how I was taught it. Yitzchak and Rivka have been married and childless, and they prayed. They pray together. Do they pray apart? We don't know. It's up to the Mefarshim. Wow, you look confused again. This is the right parasha, right?
Yeah.
Cool. They pray for a child. Rivka conceives. She has a difficult pregnancy.
Wait, where are you getting that they prayed together?
The idea of like across from one another. The BDB translates that as like facing one another. There's like different mefarshim about whether Yitzchak prayed just on their behalf, whether they prayed together.
Hmm.
That's why I said, did they or not?
You're looking at verse 21.
I'm looking at Chabad.org's Toldot in a nutshell. I'm just doing that off memory alone.
No, but in verse 21, it says, V'yatar Yitzchak Lashem L'nokach Ishto. Like, it says Isaac prayed to God. Let me guess. It's Rashi who says that they prayed together, isn't it?
So I think it's the word linchoach. It can mean opposite, on behalf of, in front of. And so this idea of like if you're praying in front of your wife, were they praying together? Like I didn't make that up. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Listen, I don't know what's true anymore. I don't know who's that. Okay, so Linchoch,
Linchoch Ishto, Rashi says he stood in one corner and prayed, and she stood in the other corner and prayed.
Okay, well, as everyone knows, if you're Rashi says
ready to fight Rashi again. Anyway,
yeah.
So they pray for children. Rivka has a difficult pregnancy. She goes to someone, and that person tells her that you have two nations inside of you who are warring, whatever that means. Esau's born first. Yaakov is born holding onto his heel. Esav grows up to be this like hunter, this cunning guy, a man of the field. Yaakov is described as like an Ishtam, I'm pretty sure, who sort of stays near the tents and is a homebody. Yitzchak favors Esav, Rivka favors Yaakov. We have the selling of the birthright. Esav is really hungry and he sells his firstborn ship to his younger brother for a pot of soup. Then we have sort of like this, I guess, parenthetical bit, right? Of there's a famine. They go to Gerar. Yitzchak presents Rivka as his sister because he thinks he's going to get killed. We see this happen twice before with his father and mother, with his parents. He digs some wells. There's a whole thing. Basically, we move past that. He digs some wells, like I think two get covered up. There's a bit of issue with the Philistines. Then we see Yitzchak grow old. He gets blind and he asks Esav to prepare him a very fancy meal. And while Esav is off hunting, Rivka tells Yaakov to get dressed up in Esav's clothing so they can trick Yitzchak. And they manage to do it. Esav returns and he's really sad. And he says that he's really mad and will... I think he says he's going to kill Yaakov. And then Yaakov flees and he goes to Haran, where last Parsha his mother came from. And he finds... He's told, or like he goes to find Lavan, who we've also seen before. And at the very end, just as an aside, Esav marries... his third wife, because earlier in the parsha, it's sort of an aside that he marries two women. And that's the parsha. That's it. Could have done it quicker, could have done it slower, did it somewhere in the middle.
I think it's funny that I'm looking at Sepharia, and the JPS translation says in 26:8, when it's talking about, like, Avimelech seeing Isaac it says saw Isaac fondling his wife Rebecca.
In the Hebrew, I think it's Litzchok, like yeah. He's playing with.
Behine Yitzchak.
It's the same Tzachak that we see Yishmael do.
Yeah.
That Sarah sees Yishmael do, and then that causes, and that's why I'm pretty sure we have this idea of it's like a sexual impropriety, because it's a usage. Well, it's a Litzchok. It's playing that suggests something of a romantic relationship between Yitzchak and Rivka. And so then I think there's parallels drawn that it's a similar sort of tzachak that we see with Yishmael that Sarah sees that would suggest something of a sexual nature.
I see.
But that's my take on it. Anyway, this week,
wow,
what have we decided to watch? The twin parsha. What piece of pop culture did we choose to compare it to?
We chose the classic twin movie, The Parent Trap.
Yes. The 1998 version?
Yes, the 1998 version.
Because I don't know about you, I'm a Lindsay Lohan Parent Trap purist. I don't care for the Hayley Mills one. I think Lindsay Lohan one is a near-perfect movie. A touch too long. But an almost perfect film.
It has a 2-hour and 8-minute runtime, which is very long, especially for a 98 movie.
Especially for a kids' movie.
Kids' movie, yeah.
But it's worth it. Every second of that, it's worth it.
Yeah. Well, and they cut a ton of scenes from this movie. So I'm also like, how long was this movie without the deleted scenes?
What I would kill to, see that unedited cut, the director's cut. Who cares about director's cut of Blade Runner? Give me the Nancy Meyers director's cut. Parent Trap, 1998, any day of the week.
Yeah.
God, I want to see that.
Okay, so the summary on IMDb is identical twins Annie and Hallie, separated at birth and each raised by one of their biological parents, later discover each other for the first time at summer camp and make a plan to bring their wayward parents back together.
Oh, I love it.
I love the term wayward parents.
Wayward as in like they're, I don't know, like naughty almost.
Right, wayward, exactly.
Like the wayward son. This movie is so good. It's just such a good movie. It's so good. You literally left someone's birthday party the other night so you could go home and finish watching The Parent Trap.
I did.
Because it's so good. It's iconic. It gives me that. It's one of those films where it's like if it's like on TV when I walk into the room, I will sit down and watch the rest of it, no matter what point of the movie it's up to, because I don't need the context, because I've seen it a million times.
Like, the prank scenes, I just, like...
they're so well thought out.
I forgot. I just feel like it's one of those movies that, like, totally formed my consciousness as a child.
Oh, 100%.
And then, like, to go back and watch it now is to be like, oh, like, that's...
it's it also, I think, yeah. Well, the thing that really struck me this time watching for some reason, in the prank... and like the big prank that the Marvas then discover, she like covers one of them in honey.
Yeah.
Would she not be covered in ants when that poor girl wakes up? I had a friend on a camp. This is the second week in a row I'm mentioning the same friend and making fun of her for something. Had a half drunk can of Coke on a camp once next to her bed. And then in the morning woke up and was like, I'm thirsty. I want a sip of this, because she was like saving it overnight. Took a sip. Mouthful of ants.
That's so disgusting.
And you're telling me this girl covered, drenched in honey, not a single ant on her.
I mean, you're acting like that's the most outlandish.
That is the most outlandish part of that prank.
No, how did they get the beds on the roof? That's insane.
How did they have the materials necessary to make a very convincing fake Union Jack flag? Like, that's handmade.
Yeah.
There's a lot of questions unanswered. And maybe in the director's cut.
In the director's cut. Well, also, like, the idea that those girls could go into that cabin and all those girls... like, they must have drugged the girls in Annie's cabin, because, like, one of them has, like, a shaving cream hairdo. Like, one of them's covered in honey. Yeah. Like, that is elaborate. There's no way they could have done that without waking anyone up.
That movie magic.
One of the biggest plot holes in the movie.
I think we can suspend our belief. They had were swimming all day, and they were just conked out and ready.
It's true.
Camp's exhausting. I don't know what to tell you, man.
Especially that Goyesha summer camp where they have fencing. Yeah.
Look, here's the thing. I didn't grow up going to American Jewish summer camps, and I went to a handful of Australian summer camps. Wildly different. So it's like very, at least the camps I went to, like very like chinuchi, like education focused. And we had program, like 3 programs a day. And in the spare time, everyone just sat in the sun or like made bracelets. There wasn't any fencing. Sometimes we went to the beach, but there wasn't like fence. Like, who goes fencing at camp? Surely there's a better way for that reveal scene. That was my...
I don't know. I actually think as far as a reveal scene, it's pretty good that they're wearing those helmets so they don't see each other.
It is if you someone sat Nancy Myers down, gun to her head, and was like, you need to include a sport in the reveal scene. There are like a million other ways that they could have done it.
What? Name one. They could have been acting
in
a play together.
Yeah, they're like the first night of camp is a masquerade evening.
Yeah.
There you go. Done. Did it.
But that's kind of...
Did
like,
that...
Masquerade is kind of like a weird thing for a child's camp, although so is fencing.
Exactly. Look, it makes sense because it introduces this like competitive edge. Their faces are covered. I get it. It's just weird to me.
Well, and also that was the moment where people realized they looked alike. Like it would be the first day of camp and somebody would be...
I think that is the first day of camp. Rewatching it now, I paid very close attention to the plotline. Okay. I think it's the first day of camp. If we're going to compare this to the Parsha, I think the first thing to compare it to is... this idea, like the movie starts off as a romance. It's a rom-com. We see the parents falling in love on a ship and getting married. Similarly, at the end of last week's parasha, the beginning of this week's parasha, it's all about this foundational relationship between Rivka and Yitzchak, which I think is like, it's a romantic relationship, right? Like love at first sight vibes at the end of Chaya Sara, and them like yearning for a child together. And it's this beautiful, like, romantic relationship that very, like, slowly devolves into sabotage and deceit later on in this week's parasha. But then you've got this, like, beautiful couple who perfectly cast Natasha Richardson and Dennis Quaid.
They are a perfect couple.
And we've got these moments of, like, really, like, of love and romance just before their relationship devolves off screen.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, because this Parsha starts off with this is the story of Isaac and then, like, goes into it, which is interesting because it's, like, very, like, until they have children, it's about him, but then it's about the children.
And then it's about him for a quick sec again, and then it's about the kids again.
Right, which, like, I guess the implication in the movie seems that the mom didn't date, and then Hallie or Annie at one point says that like Dennis Quaid, she's like, oh, you're just one of like many women,
but I think she says that to like upset Meredith, not because it's true,
but he's like attractive.
So she's
Meredith
Elizabeth hottie with a body.
Yeah, no, she's also attractive. Yeah. No, but I guess it seems unbelievable to me that neither of them would have dated someone in 11 years.
Because they were both in love with the other one still. And they were busy raising a tiny child that reminded them of their lover from long ago.
Okay, also, what is Chessie's job?
She's the housekeeper. She feeds both of them. She probably keeps it clean.
But how has she been around, like, since... She's been around since the beginning?
Yes.
Because she knew them when they were babies.
Yes.
Okay, we're just accepting.
I just assume that she worked in his house for a long time.
Okay.
The thing that really annoys me about the parent, like the one thing that really annoys me, is that we see them get married and then it says 11 years and 9 months later on the screen.
So they immediately got pregnant.
But it makes no sense because it says 11 years and 9 months later and we're introduced to the camp, which suggests that 11 years and 9 months later is their birthday, the day of the twins' birth.
But it's not.
But it's not because they're at camp and we know their birthday's in October.
Wow.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, why couldn't they just say 11 years later?
Because the 9 months implies they had a child because that is the incubation period of a child. But it just makes no sense in terms of chronology of a movie.
Thank you for telling me that 9 months is the incubation period of a child.
It makes no sense. Their birthday should be on camp, but their birthday's October, I want to say 11th or 12th.
Yeah.
Makes no sense. No sense. Every time I see that on screen, since I could do math, I'm like, that's unnecessary.
Since I could do math.
I've been watching it a long time.
Well, right. Okay.
Yeah, because I dare you.
But we know the movie is called The Parent Trap, so we know it's about them and their parents, about children and parents. And so, yeah, when they say 11 years later, I think you could make the assumption
that 9 months.
That Lindsay Lohan, who's on the movie poster, Yeah. That's what I'm saying. You could have just said 11 years later.
Exactly. You could have, but they chose not to. And it is a very sour note in an otherwise fantastic film for me.
Yeah, it really doesn't add up.
Anyway, that's somebody just my grievance. I'm sorry if I've ruined Parent Trap for anyone else with that one little fact, but it annoys me to no end.
Okay, so the next point of comparison that we have is Twin Life.
Yes.
So you brought up that this is a question of nature versus nurture, right? So we see in the movie, like, obviously they're trying to set up that they have similarities despite
spending their entire lives apart.
Right. They both like poker. They're both allergic to strawberries, which is, I think, like, it's a more
like an actual genetic thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm thinking more of, like, there's no reason for them both to enjoy Oreos and peanut butter.
Well, I thought that the implication was that, like, their parents used to eat Oreos, like, that both of them, one of the parents must have introduced it to the other.
Oh, I've never.
And so that's why, like, growing up, they would always eat Oreos and peanut butter together.
Oh, interesting. I never thought about it like that.
They're both good at fencing.
They're really good at fencing. They both have these conniving minds of trickery and pranks.
Yes, they do. Which is different than Yaakov and Esav.
Well, they're set up in the Peshat itself as just complete opposites in every way. Right? Esav is like this hunter, like the conniving man of the field. And Yaakov sits by the tent all day and supposedly learns according to Mefarshim, but, like, we don't know that. He's just a guy who likes to be at home.
I get it. I'm an inside guy too.
Yeah, I'm a stay in the tent kind of gal.
Yeah, for sure.
But what was I gonna say?
Like, literally, now that school has started, I'm never at home. But your dad is always like, "Are you gonna leave the house today?"
I wish I was at home all the time.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I think it's really interesting. The Mefarshim look a lot at the differences between the two sons.
Yeah.
And then Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, who is a German commentator, has a really interesting take about children's education and how, if they had, like, differentiated the education or if they had changed it based on each of those sons' knowledge, it would have been more beneficial, but they didn't do that. And so you sort of saw these differences.
Whoa.
From the top of my head, that's what it was. But you've got other Mefarshim who talk about, like, up until puberty, they were pretty much very similar. And then sort of once they hit 13, you saw their different interests develop. And they became two different people. But I think it's, like, I don't know, I'm on baby TikTok a lot. And you see parents with, like, their 3-month-old. And they're like, my 3-month-old is precocious and inquisitive. And I'm like, that baby's 3 months old. And I understand that some children have, like, innate
qualities
from birth. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how that affected, because, like, the text seems, it's like, it's just they're two different people, completely different people, but how much of that is,
well, right, and then, like, if Rivka had a favorite and Yitzhak had a favorite and then they spend more time with one child or the other, I can see how, like, yeah, you might do more things to, like, be like a people pleaser.
Yeah. And I guess it's also a point of, like, people might have innate qualities. Like, maybe Esav's the precocious 2-year-old and Yaakov's the more quiet one. But parents tend to foster those specific abilities, right? So if you have a really quiet kid who doesn't want to go outside and rough and tumble, then you'll make them sit with you at home with the mums by the tent. And then Rivka spends more time with that child and she favors that child more.
Right.
So it's sort of like a natural follow-on, I think. But it just, I think a lot about this idea of favoritism that is so obvious in the text.
Yeah.
And how it plays into the family dynamics of the four of them.
As the mother of twins.
Your cats?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I actually do think about nature versus nurture because, like, Zatar and Tsum Tsum have totally different personalities. And yet they are, like, everything's the same for them.
If you're about to tell me your cats are identical twins.
They're not identical.
Okay.
And, like, I guess it's whatever. People always ask me if they're siblings. And I'm like, well, I found them by the same dumpster. They're both black cats. Like, yes. Odds are they're the same age. But did you know that you can have multiple fathers in a litter of cats?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What a fun fact.
Yeah. So I'm always like, I don't know. I've never had them DNA tested.
You don't know if your cat's birth mother. I don't know. Is a slut or not.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if it's being considered being a slut.
I don't know, man. Not to slut shame, but like promiscuous cat, you know?
But yeah, I don't, you know what? I'm never going to get them DNA tested because we're a family, you know, and it doesn't matter whether or not.
It's like when like
siblings,
when I don't know, like same-sex couples have kids, but like one is clearly, specifically with gay men, and like one of them is clearly the donor, and they're like, we don't know who's who, but it's like the child has like flaming red hair or is like just the exact image of one of the fathers, and they're like, we don't know, it could be either of us, and I'm like, but could it? It's the same with your cats.
Yeah,
your cats are basically children. Connected to the twin life, like, you know, this nature versus nurture, this their connection and their differences.
Whoa, wait, I have something about
that. Okay, I have something about that.
Because we're basically, like, led to believe that Annie and Hallie are the same, except one of them has a British accent. Like, that they are very similar. And that, like, after a couple days in the isolation cabin, they become besties.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just.
But also because, like, they're making fun of Meredith for knowing nothing about camping. And I'm like, Annie, you live in London. Your mother is a fashion designer. When's the last time you went camping, you faker, you poser?
Yeah.
Anyway.
You tell her.
I literally thought about that. Oh, sorry. I keep hitting the table. And Valerie keeps looking and shaking her head. But connected to this twin life idea, I think Asaf and Yakov set up what is become a fantastic trope in media, which is this opposite twin archetypes, and they're the blueprint of it, right? You have two twins, but they're like diametrically opposites. And I'm gonna say some names and not offer up any explanation. I just want you to hear it. I want it to sit with you for a bit, okay? Asaf, Hallie, Zach, Mary Kate, Tamara. But then on the other side, you've got Yaakov, Annie, Cody, Ashley, and Tia. Try and tell me I'm wrong.
You can
break up all of like the most famous twins in the world of media, which I've said are Hallie and Annie, Zach and Cody, Mary Kate and Ashley, and Tia and Tamara, into a very, but it's like, it's not even hard to do. It was so immediate and clear cut who is the Asaf and who is the Yaakov.
So maybe it is nurture that makes them this way.
Or maybe it's just like, it's just a really good trope for film and for media, of like these two people who are born at the same time of the same people
but are inherently different,
but are inherently completely different, and it sets up for wacky hijinks, like for example the different prank wars, like for example Zach and anything they did in the hotel, Zach and Cody, Mary Kate in that movie where she really liked soccer and Ashley didn't like soccer, and then you got Yaakov and Asaf, wacky hijinks, I'm gonna sell my brother my birthright because I want some soup. The wackiest high drink of all.
The wackiest.
I've been thinking about, like, you could break up any twin cup pairing and
couple. Say what you mean.
And say, are they an Asaf or a Yaakov?
Great. It says in this Google Doc, try to tell me I'm wrong, I dare you. But I would never. I would never try to tell you. No, because
I'm right. Because I'm right.
Yeah.
But yeah. Ugh, these twins.
Wait, what about, I actually might draw a parallel between Fred and George Weasley. And
you say you can't break them up?
Well, because I think it's similar to, like, you're right, that Hallie and Annie, like, clearly there are some differences. But, like, again, they're both pranksters. They both have red hair. Okay,
I think Fred and George subvert the opposite twin stereotype. They're not part of this archetype. They're a different twin archetype, which is like just the same person twice copy pasted. Right. An example of this would be Kim Possible's younger brothers,
right?
Or Tim and Jim, I think. Tim and Jim Possible, anyway. But like, they're just the same, like, literally, like, they copied a file, pasted a file, and like, it's just funny for some reason for your character to have siblings like who are twins.
And the dudes from The Social Network,
they're real people, they're based on a real story.
I'm 6'2.
220.
Oh, 220, and there's two of me.
Yeah. Like, so I think there's two different twin archetypes, and Fred and George don't fall into the opposite twins. They fall into copy-paste twins.
Wow. If you're a twin, feel free to weigh in.
Which one are you? Are you an opposite twin? Because I have, like, I grew up with a set of twins in my class. Like, for 12 years, we were in school together, 13 years. And they were opposite twins. They were like mamash. Like one did karate, one did ballet, one did soccer, one was like into clothes and hair and boys. So like literally like a Mary-Kate and Ashley movie, but I grew up with them for 13 years.
Yeah, so I knew these two twins growing up that were, I would say more, like now I think they're very different. But when we were growing up, I don't know that I saw like a huge difference. But what was funny is everything they had, it was the same, but like one had red and one had blue.
I love it when parents color code their children.
It's so good.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Getting it's assigned good. A color and then like that's just like the purple twin.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
Like
it's literally Phil and Lil from Rugrats. Yeah. Like just really easy to keep track of your child that way.
Yeah.
And to make it really like divisible lines of you don't have to share things because you each get a color.
Yeah. Very clear whose is whose.
It's great. It's a good time.
What was I going to say? But then this summer when I was teaching, I had one twin in my class and the other one was in the theater program.
Right.
And they were more like copy-paste twins.
Nice. They were just like nothing really
I mean, distinguishing them. They were also different from each other, but they both were like really into this like early emo phase. Like nice. They both wore fishnet like hand things. What are those called? Like they're not gloves, but they're like
the fingerless, like just half stocking things. I know. I definitely know like a handful of copy paste twins in my life. But that's the other thing. Like this has nothing to do with like personality wise. It's not personality wise. It's more just like in terms of looks. And I know that there are Mepharshim who say that Yaakov and Esav looked the same. But also, it cracks me up every time when I read this parsha, but Rashi just character assassinates Esav as an infant child. Because the text is like, this baby is born and he's ruddish. And then Rashi's like, that baby's ugly and full of hair and red hair is bad and means murderer and Esav sucks. And I'm like, Rashi, bro, this is a baby. Like it's so funny every time to me because he just fully character assassinates Esav, like based obviously in Midrashim, but then I find it really funny because you have other Mepharshim who say that him and Yaakov were physically identical.
But then why would we hear that Esav has red hair? Like why would they specific or that he was red?
Well, because according to Rashi, red hair signifies
that you're evil.
Like it's like a murderous or a butchering quality about you.
On that, Rashi and I agree.
That red hair.
Lindsay Lohan, I'm looking at you.
Well, I did student teaching last year and I actually taught this part. And when I said, like, why do you think that Rashi like goes on about all of these things about Esav? And one of the kids said, and I literally had never thought of it, like connecting the two, but because Rashi says he's really, really hairy and that red hair equals like this murderous tendency. And the kid's like, maybe he was really like, because he had so much hair, like the amount of hair he had equaled like how high his aggressiveness was. And so like the more hair this child had, the more aggressive his like
I love that idea. Just like if we map that onto other people, we know that like their aggression like pushes the hair follicles out.
It's like you have like friends who like just always look grumpy, you know what I mean? Like I don't know, certain people have like quality traits that I feel like their physical, the way they physically look is definitely like reminiscent of them as a person, if that makes sense. Like I have like a grumpy friend I can think of and he always sort of like has like a furrowed brow.
Right, because he's grumpy.
No, I don't think so. That's just
how
like how
hairy is he?
That's just like how his face falls. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like resting bitch face. Like I don't think they mean to have that face, but
I appreciate that your male friend has resting bitch face.
He does. I love him. I think a very easy thematic link to draw is the fact that, yeah, like you said, Lindsay Lohan has flaming red hair and so does Esav.
Yeah.
And that's just fun.
At least at this stage in her life. Now she's blonde.
Now
right?
She's blonde. But
can we talk about, wow, that's the pop culture moment I should have been, was Lindsay Lohan dancing in Mykonos, that video.
Lindsay Lohan, who like tried to kidnap a refugee child away from their parent. Did you see that?
I remember that, yeah.
It was wild. That lady.
I mean, Lindsay Lohan is the epitome of like a child star. Like,
I think she's the blueprint. No, yeah. I lied. There are other blueprints. Drew Barrymore is the blueprint, but she turned her life around. Lindsay Lohan has time.
Right, of course. But I think like, I don't know. I think you can just see like how the like being famous, that lifestyle was hard for her, right? Yeah, like, you can see, sure. Like, she had, like, a clubbing phase, and she, you know, like...
She had a bisexual phase.
She had a bisexual... Listen, haven't we all?
No, I grew out of my...
Oh, yeah.
She had buying a club in Greece phase.
Yeah.
I think it's also her fam... Like, her family life is... Like, her mom was also always in the tabloids.
Right.
And so I feel like that also... Because I think there are plenty of child stars who have, like, grounded enough families that doesn't really affect them. But then you have so many child stars who... Money comes into it and, like, the Macaulay Culkin of it all. Or, you know what I mean? The Britney Spears of it all. Like, families just sort of...
Totally. Well, and Lindsay Lohan was, like, a model from, like, when she was 3 years old. So it's clearly, like, a stage mom kind of situation.
Yeah.
And... one of the like fun facts on IMDb was like in like she has this like theme of her movies that in The Parent Trap she plays twins, in Freaky Friday she switches bodies with her mother, and then in Just My Luck there's also like a switching.
I don't know, I just feel bad for Lindsay Lohan because she gave me so much, like, so literally so much of my childhood has been framed by Lindsay Lohan movies.
For sure.
Even like just the
Confessions bookend. Of a Teenage Drama Queen.
I mean, her work as a young adult is sublime. Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen, you had Just My Luck, you had Herbie Fully Loaded, you had Mean Girls. Like, she was... Like, her and Amanda Bynes literally defined my early teenage years.
Yeah.
And I owe so much to them both. You guys, if you... Lindsay Lohan or Amanda Bynes, if you're listening to this podcast, let me know what I can do for you. You know?
It feels like, do you think they were ever friends, or do you think it was like an I don't know her situation?
Well, I think that Lindsay was always very much like a Disney star for me in my head, but like Disney films.
Mm-hmm.
And Amanda was a Nickelodeon person.
Oh, we forgot to mention Lindsay Lohan also had a music career.
Yeah, she did.
Did you ever pull a prank at camp?
the most benign camp of prank of my life was at camp, where I convinced my friend Sarah that I had glasses when I didn't have glasses. I like had just was wearing someone's glasses as a joke, and Sarah's like, why do you have those? And I was like, I have glasses now. And she's like, no you don't. And in my head, in like those 0.5 seconds, I was like, F you, Sarah. Yeah, I could have glasses. And I was like, I have to say, I was not in high school. I was a madracha. I was 22 at this point. And
you still felt the need to just like totally just mess with your friend.
Yeah, and she's like, what do you mean? She's like, you don't have glasses. I was like, no, like I have like eye strain issues, and so I usually just wear them in the morning when I wake up, or if like I'm just really tired and I'm late, I wear them.
Wearing those yellow glasses now.
And Sarah's like, I don't believe. And so then like I went to this girl who I had just taken the glasses from, and she didn't really need these, like she, like the tiniest prescription, she had another pair. I was like, can I just hang on to this for like a bit that I'm doing? And so every morning when I saw Sarah, I'd make sure I'd had these glasses on. I was like, hey, and she like got convinced. And then she was convinced.
How did you do the reveal?
That's the thing. She was convinced that she felt bad because I like made her feel bad that she had questioned it. I was like, Sarah, why would I make this up? Like, that's so stupid. Why don't you believe me? I'm your best friend. And she's like, yeah, you're right. And then she left camp early to go to a wedding, and she left, and I sent her a voice note. And I was like, hey, so I don't have glasses. And she's like, why? She's like, why did you invest so much in the dumbest joke of all time? And I was like, because it made me laugh.
Well, this is just like such a parallel to your thing about how Australia doesn't have stairs.
Australia doesn't have stairs in public buildings. That's not a joke. That's a legit fact.
I don't know we whether have ramps. To believe you or not.
We have ramps because it's an accessibility issue. Public stairs... public buildings in Australia since 1972 do not have stairs. They have ramps, or they have elevators, or both.
Gum the gum. Like,
no, there's also, no stairs. There's no stairs.
I can't.
Because there's not enough space. There's not enough space in a building for stairs, ramps, and elevator. So they gave up the stairs because it's not wheelchair. It's not accessible.
I can't believe you because I know that you made up. But this it's lie not. About
it's
stairs.
Not. It's true.
Whatever. Okay. I've been to Australia, and I have walked upstairs in public buildings.
Those buildings were built before 1972.
Oh, so it's only buildings.
Yeah, because that's when the code changed. Uh-huh, that's when the laws went into effect.
I've been in the Sydney Opera House. There were stairs.
Yeah, that's built before 1972.
You don't know off the top of your head when the Sydney Opera House
no!
was built?
No!
Wow, that's embarrassing for you.
When was the Empire State Building built?
I don't...
Exactly.
Wait, no.
Checkmate. Check. mate.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, back to the parsha. This idea of playing favorites, which we sort of touched on before, I think also just raises a very interesting point about the parent trap, which is like, how did Nick and Elizabeth choose which twin got which? Because at this point, they're babies. You can't really make the choice. Did they flip a coin for it? Did they line up the parents? Like, did they just stand there and see which baby went to which parent? And then, like, that's who they took? That's
funny. Like, those videos where you, like, put the dog in the middle and you run to either side.
Yeah, I'm thinking a much nerdier approach, which is, like, parents get Pokemon stuffed animals and then see which Pokemon doll their child approaches. And then, like, that's their starter Pokemon.
Oh, I have seen those videos. And I don't know how I feel about that.
Anyways, I'm like, how did Nick and Elizabeth choose?
Okay, here's what I think they did. I think they did, you know, like in The Princess Bride, where they had to, like, where he, like, they have the two cups of wine, and, you know, it's like he switches them. He, like, puts them where he thinks they should be. So they, like, put the babies, and then they were like, you put this baby closer to me, which means you want this baby more. So I'm going to take that baby. But really, you thought that that's what I was going to do. So now I'm going to take the other baby. Like, they were, because they were getting divorced. So, like, yeah, they probably hated each other at that point.
But,
and so they, like, would want to, like, take the other one's favorite child.
My other question is that, first of all, a great theory.
Alternate. They put them each under a laundry basket and then they, like, move them around like cups, you know? Like, until they lost track. Nice.
That one I'll accept. But I'm also like, because we have this bit of lore from the movie where Natasha Richardson is like, you didn't chase after me. And I feel like probably their marriage ended in sort of this big fight and she sort of just ran out of the house. Do you think she just grabbed a random baby out of the crib and then they worked out the details later?
Do you think that if you were a mother and you had twins that you would leave with one of your babies?
Well, I just want to know, because like they haven't seen each other since the divorce, but maybe she like ran out on him, took one baby. And then they settled things from like across the pond via mail.
How did she make that choice? That's Sophie's choice.
So maybe she's like in such a flap, in such a hurry. She just like her babies look exactly the same. I don't think she stops to think, do I want Hallie or Annie? She's just like, this is a baby.
I feel like she grabbed both of them.
I don't know.
She would have grabbed both of them.
I don't know. But then what's he gonna do?
He's the dad. They never get parental.
I don't know. Anyway, and then I think the last very obvious way to parallel this parsha.
Do you want
to
turn on a light, or are we just going to sit in the dark?
We're just going to sit in the dark.
Okay.
I think the last very obvious way to parallel or like draw connections between the parsha and the parent trap is that Yaakov takes Esau's place and like dresses up in this episode of Subterfuge, and the twins switch places. Again, which I have lots of comments about. No one seems to be angry at the fact that they switch places. Dennis Quaid literally says, I'm not mad. I'm just happy to know that, like, it's Annie. And I'm like, Hallie, your daughter, flew internationally across the world on someone else's passport. It is illegal. And you're telling me that you're not mad about it? You're telling me that your daughter traveled internationally for what, for all we know, is the first time. And you're like, it's fine. Why are none of them getting in? Why are there no consequences? None of them are getting in trouble. Or is it because they realize that, like, it's so ridiculous that they hid a twin from the other one that they feel guilty about it, so there's no way you can punish them?
I think it's that one.
Because it's like, what happens when they're teenagers and they're like...
I think that that's what the whole premise is based on. Like, that's why they, like, Annie and Hallie come up with this. They're like, our parents pretended that half of our family didn't exist.
No, they come up with it because they don't want to see each other again, because it's an open wound, and because it's so difficult to figure out like parenting schedules when you have to go across the world to change siblings.
What I mean,
like their entire reason, their reasoning for
you're talking about the parents' reasoning.
Yeah, that's the parents' reasoning. But the reasoning, like their reasoning for inciting the trap of parents, is that they just want to know their other parent. It's not a my dad lied to me, so I'm going to like piss off across the world. It's I've never met my mom. No, I really want her to like me.
No, it's more than that.
No, it isn't. It's they just want to know the other parent.
No, it's more than that because they explicitly say that they want them to get their parents back together.
But none of it is about them being angry at the parents for splitting them up.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
I don't know, but I think that like they're like, well, they like separated us and like created this whole lie and therefore, like, we can't get in trouble for
okay, reading so much into the text.
How dare you?
I don't know. I'm just like...
No, but I think that that's part of the premise, is they're like, we can't possibly get in trouble because...
I don't think they think that far in advance. They're 11, and they're like, I just really want to meet my mom, I really want to meet my dad, and they'll figure it out, and we can get them back together. I don't think they think about, they're not going to get us in trouble because they've lied to us for so long, and it's been, like, the guilt has been eating away at them.
No, I think that they're... I don't think that it's, like, that extreme, but I think they're like, how much trouble could we really get in?
I don't think they think about the consequences of the actions.
Clearly, they're both very, like, quick to act.
Yes.
We saw with the prank war.
But I just think, like, what happens in, like, 5 years after this movie? Like, they're 16. Hallie comes in late. She breaks curfew. And then...
And then she's like, you lied to me for the first 11 years of my life.
And they're like, Hallie, you're grounded. And she's like, I'm grounded? What happened when you kept me from my twin sister for 11 years? Try ground me now, bitch. I think that's how it would have gone down. I think... At what point do you think they all go to therapy?
Oh, immediately.
I don't think so. I don't think Dennis Quaid's character believes in therapy. It's a judgment call.
That's spicy. Okay, also, I really like the subplot of the romance between Martin and Chessie.
I don't.
I'm also offended that you haven't mentioned that today I'm dressed like Chessie.
I thought you would have brought it up already. That's on you.
Okay.
I don't
except I'm not wearing light wash jeans because I was like, there's no way I'm going to be at Pardes for 12 hours wearing jeans.
I don't like that romance because it's just compulsory heteronormativity. They're both clearly very gay.
Oh, they're both so gay. I'm mad that you just took my joke. I was like, it's not, I turned to your den and
your
I was like.
Joke? I made that joke on Tumblr in like 2008.
Okay.
Fine. It got notes. I will say it.
I probably reblogged it. No, I turned to Yarden and I was like, wow, it's so progressive that they make Martin bi.
Like, he's...
He could very much be bi. They could both be bi.
They could be. Chessie's a lesbian.
Maybe she's a lesbian with, like, one exception, which is Martin. When he comes out wearing that Speedo and she's like, Martin, what are you doing?
Oh, my God. I'll accept that Martin could be bi. I think Chessie's a lesbian.
Well, also, if Martin is bi, it makes the whole thing where he goes, if I was seeing my ex and I had your legs and he like goes in and pulls this specific dress, I'm like, that's the thing.
I think he's purposefully coded as gay. Specifically because of that scene.
Yeah.
And she's coded as a lesbian because have you seen what she wears for that whole movie?
Right.
Also, the way she goes, oh, gee, monsieur.
That's so funny. Enchanté.
Yeah.
Okay. Love the outfits throughout the movie. The characters look great. The matching outfits that Annie and Hallie have after, like, when they're both wearing, like, little, like, yellow-themed outfits. Really it's good.
I have one very important point that might turn into another rant if we've got time for it. Why would none of the camp stuff... concerned about these two girls who are put into isolation for like most of camp and then like become recluses and don't talk to any of the friends they made in the first few days and only spend time with each other, and also they look exactly the same, and also they are clearly planning something very in depth and specific because they go to meals in a public space with giant poster boards like about binders. Each other's families.
Yeah.
And like they've got like they're like pointing with like a stick to like these poster board floor plans at dinner space. And if I were a staffer on that camp, I would be like, something's going on, I'm going to report it to a superior. Are you not the most intrigued? Do you not go home from that camp and tell everyone the things that you've seen, the doppelgangers that you find, the fact that they're clearly planning something and you think they might have switched places? It's all I would think about. I would wait till next year. I could not wait to get back to camp next year to figure out if they were actually sisters, if they had switched places, what was going on.
Totally. Well, no, I think it's more like
this is like a gross like mistreatment of a situation. Number one, that the isolation cabin is a thing that is like an insane
yes.
premise that like if two children aren't getting along, you send them to only be the two of them for all of camp. Like yeah. they're on a permanent timeout together. That yeah. seems like a horrible idea.
It's really
and
funny.
Yeah, number two, like this prank war is insane. None of the other kids get in trouble. Like there seem to be no repercussions for the like beds on the roof thing. We don't find out how that yeah. works out.
That's so funny.
There are three people that work at this camp.
Look, yeah, the mothers really need to get their stuff together.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And then, yeah, I agree. Once you start seeing them, like, cut their hair so they really look the same, like...
That's the other thing. Like, they're making themselves look more alike. One of them comes out of the cabin one day with pierced ears and a haircut, and you're right. telling me that you're not concerned in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Right. They should be concerned. They should be calling the parents. Also, I mean, like, that after 8 weeks, you wouldn't go and pick up your child yourself also seems, like, unlikely to me. Right. Like, that you wouldn't come to the camp and that they would be able that. To pull this whole thing off.
I get that because, like, they live very far away from where that camp is.
It's true.
Like, we used to bus down to Melbourne on, like, a 10-hour bus or, like, to just outside of Melbourne for summer camp.
Mm.
And our parents would drop us off at the bus station, but like they wouldn't come to the campsite to pick us up. You'd get bused back to a central location.
Okay, well, sorry, my parents love me.
The other thing I will say about this movie, maybe the last thing because we're running out of time, Meredith and Nick know each other for 8 weeks before getting engaged, and then the wedding's supposed to be in 2 weeks. It's very Wait, from.
Did you read my notes on this?
I also had notes where I wrote the 8 week engagement plus they're getting married in 2 weeks is very, very frum.
Like, okay, that is insane. Dennis Quaid is a horrible father.
Yeah.
He's a horrible father. His child comes home from camp and he not only has a new girlfriend, but they're getting married in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's insane. That is, okay, and they have a wedding for 2 weeks away after she gets back from camp. And they don't have a venue, and she doesn't have a dress.
Yeah, it's called a frum wedding. It's the called woman I'm is Hasidic.
Unhinged.
It's called I'm Hasidic, and I'm gonna go to a gemach, and it's gonna be fine.
Meredith is unhinged.
She's 26. I'm the same age as her. You're older than her.
No. I'm actually her age because she's 28 in this movie.
The actress is 28.
The actress is 28.
The character of Meredith Blake is 26. I'm 26.
Okay, there's no way that that woman is 26. The way that Meredith dresses and acts is not the way that a 26-year-old would
it
dress
It was a 26
act.
In the 90s. 26-year-old in the 90s. I love her so much.
All the details of that wedding.
It's up in the air. I'm telling you, she's Hasidic. She's a Chabad lady.
Yeah. Okay, also I wrote the same thing that I wrote when we watched Stepmom, is like people were alcoholics in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like alcohol plays such a huge role in this movie of like, make mine a double, I've had a hard day.
Yeah. I was going to say that like there's that classic tweet that I remember reading of like, it's so classic that Nick has literally no idea that his children have switched places until they're both standing in front of him. Meanwhile, Chessie figures it out after like 2 days because the girl isn't eating
the
properly.
The dog knows. The dog knows.
No, but Chessie's like, this child isn't eating like she usually does. Something's up. And meanwhile, the dad's like, oh, there's two of them.
Yeah, for sure. Classic.
And I will also say my favorite line of the movie recently changed after this viewing, and it is now when the grandfather, when she's like, I'm a bit woozy, gonna go outside for some air, and then the grandfather goes, woozy, huh? Like that, and it makes me laugh every time.
Okay, we do have to talk about their final pranks when they come together at the end of the movie. I have a story about a gecko.
Oh yeah, you said you have a gecko story.
After Yardan moved into her new apartment last year, at one point she discovered a gecko in the apartment and she was like all freaked out. And then she's like, it ran across my pillow and I was just cracking up. She's freaking out about this lizard. And I sent her the image of Meredith Blake getting the lizard stuck in her mouth. And I was like, yeah. Well, because I was like, who cares? You have a tiny lizard.
I hate it.
But I was like, you're going to wake up with a lizard in your mouth.
No, I totally get it. One time there was a snail on my bedroom wall. I have no idea how it got there. And my brother refused to get it off. And I cried. I was like 18. And I was like sobbing because I'm like, there's a snail on my wall and that's disgusting. So I understand. I'm team Yarden in this story. I want to say, because I brought this up and then you were like, yeah, because that's me. This TikTok like mini trend of people saying that they thought Natasha Richardson in this movie was Princess Diana.
Oh yeah.
And you said that you also thought that she was Princess Diana, and that just cracks me up. It's so funny. Yeah. It's really funny.
It's because of the hair.
It's the hair and just like the general attitude and amazingness.
Right. And she's British.
She's
lovely. I mean, when you're American, how do you know? Okay. also
because they're two different people.
Again, when you're American. Okay, shall we cast?
Yeah, do you want to go first?
Asav and Yaakov, you always make me go first.
Okay, then I'll go first. Last week I was like, I'll go first. And you're like, no, I want to go first because I always go first. But I can go first. Asav. Leo DiCaprio from The Revenant.
Okay.
Yaakov. Leo DiCaprio from Revolutionary Road.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's good.
So it's because they're twins.
Nice.
Yeah. Thank you.
For Asav.
Little giggle.
Jason Momoa.
Nice.
And for Yaakov The Rock.
Nice. That's why you're laughing.
Based on just that one is hairy and the other one isn't.
Very nice. We love to see it.
I'd
like to see The Rock in a more studious, quiet role.
Yeah. I also think that my second runner-up is Sacha Baron Cohen in both roles.
Interesting. You told me that you saying Vin Diesel, that was just the red herring. Get me off the scent.
I texted Shoshana yesterday and I said, just so you know, I'm casting Vin Diesel as both of them. Funny. But okay. I got pretty close with Jason Momoa and The Rock. The Rock Johnson.
I was thinking, how funny would it be if Nick Offerman as Asav.
And then who would...
Nick Offerman specifically as Ron Swanson. Like as the Asav. Hunter, but like this, like imagine like just this very like solemn man who's like, I know more things than you about this. Anyway, I like this person.
Who would be the Yaakov with Ron Swanson?
I was trying to think of that.
Chris Pratt.
No, I was thinking that too, but no. So when you said Jason Momoa.
No, it's Chris Pratt from Parks and Rec and then Chris Pratt after he got in amazing in really shape for. What movie?
Nice. For Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is when you said Jason Momoa as Asav and then you started to laugh, for a second I thought you were going to be like, Aziz Ansari for Yaakov. And then I was trying to imagine Aziz Ansari like, hey, I'm Yaakov. And then, that made me laugh. I think that's a really funny one, right? Diametric opposites.
Yeah. I think it could work.
It could work. Anyway, that's it. That's the parsha. That's the parent trap.
Okay. See y'all later.
Bye, you guys.
Bye.
Next time. Bye.